Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Millennials navigate an overhauled education system, the stressors of the workplace, divisive social issues, and a resurgence of activism. They're disillusioned, and they want more than their parents wanted. They want more than mere wealth. We're not talking about American millennials, however, we're talking about those coming of age in China. Journalist Eric Fish is in Brookings for a China town hall. That's Tuesday, October 24th, tomorrow. The program begins at 6 with a webcast featuring Steve Orlins, president of the National Committee on U.S.-China Relations. He'll be interviewing former U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice. Then Eric Fish takes the stage. He's a journalist, and he's the author of the book China's Millennials, The Want Generation. He was based in China from 2007 to 2014, where he worked for the Economic Observer newspaper, and he wrote on Chinese politics, social issues, and education for outlets including Foreign Policy, The Atlantic, The Diplomat, and The Telegraph. He's interviewed hundreds of Chinese youth from around the country born in the 1980s and 90s to explore how this generation is navigating the enormous socioeconomic and political shifts unfolding in their country. He currently writes for the Asia Society in New York. He hosts the Asia In Depth podcast, and he's writing a book about Chinese students in American universities. He joins us now from Brookings. Eric Fish, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the legacy of Tiananmen Square and the movement that some of these millennials have you know, heard about for so long.
Yeah, so, I mean, before Tiananmen, there was about a decade of economic reform in China, but it was still a very strictly controlled socialist apparatus with a lot of control over people's personal lives. The Communist Party kind of clung to socialist ideology, even though they had obviously embraced capitalism, so it kind of took the Tiananmen protest to realize that that approach was bunk. And after 89, there was kind of this soul-searching in the Communist Party about how can we stay in power, how can we keep a hold of the young people, the type of young people that protested in Tiananmen. And a couple big things came of that. The first was the education system was really overhauled to push a more nationalistic agenda, focusing on this kind of so-called century of humiliation between the Opium War and World War II and the Japanese invasion, and kind of pushed the idea that foreigners tried to carve up China and exploit it until the Communist Party kind of rescued them. So that education started in 1991, and this generation's really been brought up on that. But the other big legacy of Tiananmen was kind of this tacit consensus emerged afterwards where the government really kind of backed out of people's personal lives and made more substantive economic reforms and basically said, we'll let you get rich, we'll let you have as much personal freedom as you want as long as it doesn't get political and as long as you accept our one-party rule. And then the economy has just exploded since that time. So these kind of twin pillars, as I call them, of the nationalistic education and toward economic growth, I think, has really sustained the legitimacy among the young generation. But I think that's starting to change a little bit now as the economy slows.
Is it the slowing of the economy that's sort of, you know, breaking that understanding? Or is this generation of millennials saying, that's not the deal we're interested in? It's not enough.
I think it's a little of both. I mean, basically the key source of legitimacy is that the party has delivered economic growth, so it doesn't need to open up to a more pluralistic political system. But if it's not keeping that part of the bargain, then of course that starts to collapse a little bit. But now you do have young people who have kind of largely come of age in an era of growth and stability, and a lot of young people are taking that for granted. They don't remember the really hard times, the poverty of the Mao era, kind of the social and political upheaval of that time. So they're kind of saying, well, that bargain, we never signed on for that in the first place. We want more than that, and you're not holding up that end of the bargain anyway. So, I think that is, there's a couple different angles coming for it, but I think that as you are seeing young people come of age now with more access to the internet, who grew up with a lot of differing viewpoints and becoming more kind of emboldened to challenge the status quo, whether that's kind of more minute local things or major political questions.
So in your interviews and your conversations in China, when we say they want more than that, what do they want? Can they articulate it? Are there major themes?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's a lot of very different things. I think when the reforms started and economic growth started, those that had experienced the hardship, they were happy with just materialism and material goods. And young people now are wanting something beyond that. A lot want like to enjoy life, to enjoy their job, to do something meaningful, not just get a paycheck, not just go for the job that gets the most money. You see a major revival in religion. I mean, China's very unique in that young people are more religious than the elderly. You see a lot of young people wanting some sort of spiritual satisfaction, whether that comes from religion or volunteering or travel, just kind of wanting a deeper sense of self-fulfillment and a more of a sense of meaning in life than just economic success.
I know it's a difficult comparison because obviously you can't compare the Chinese government and the American government, but are there themes to what you're seeing in this generation that would parallel with an American generation? What does it bring to mind for you?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of striking how similar a lot of the themes are. I think this generation did grow up with pretty stable, successful economic atmosphere, and now the economy is slowing. Things are getting a lot tougher for Chinese millennials in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of disillusionment. And you see a lot of the same issues that we see in America now, where you have a lot of college graduates that have a hard time getting a job. Housing is becoming more unaffordable, and kind of the dream that a lot of people grew up expecting is not quite what reality is being able to provide. So I do think politically, socially, you do see a lot of similar currents in that vein.
Are you seeing, you know, a groundswell for any particular kind of political movement?
No, I mean, there's a lot of fragmented issues. Over the last decade, there have been a lot of environmental protests. In 2013, there was a big kind of free press protest when there was a censorship incident at a very liberal newspaper that a lot of young people jumped on and supported. There's been some movements for official accountability. There were a lot of online movements kind of exposing corrupt officials, but nothing unifying where people are saying we want to overthrow the system. I think still the political system, the way it is, has a broad array of support. I think if you ask most young Chinese, they'll say we don't want to overthrow the Communist Party. They've delivered this economic growth, but we do want to see certain reforms within that system, more accountability for officials, more freedoms for the press, more personal freedoms, more responsible environmental aspects and things like that. But no, I don't think there's the stirrings of another Tiananmen on the horizon anytime soon. But if the economy slows, that, like I said, that's the big source of legitimacy. So if something happens there, that could shake things up. And I think all bets are off if there's any kind of economic crisis.
What sort of access do the internet do millennials have?
So the general population of China, about 55% has internet access. But if you break that down, people under 25, 80% of that age cohort is online. So young people are much more active on the internet. And comparing to American millennials, on an average week, American millennials spend 21 hours online. Chinese millennials spend 27 hours, so even more internet addicted than we are in the West. But of course, China's internet is very, very heavily censored. Facebook, Twitter, these kind of things are censored. There's an army of online monitors stamping out any kind of subversive thought. But people get around that and use coded language to criticize different things politically. And a lot of people more and more now, they're cracking down on the internet, and that's prompting people to download a circumvention software that allows them to jump over that great firewall censorship apparatus. So young people have a very wide access to information that challenges the party line, and I'm always constantly surprised by how well-informed young people are about political issues that are so heavily censored in the country.
Talk about English corners and these places that you talk about in your book where people can go and speak of things in English that maybe are the language adds a layer of protection.
Yeah, I think those who have studied English particularly well and have become particularly fluent tend to be a little more critical in the first place. I think you see that all over the world because studying another language kind of forces you to think in different ways, and especially for Chinese, it opens this whole new world of like American media, other Western media with information that challenges the status quo. And like English Corners, this was a big contributor to the Tiananmen protests throughout the 80s when there was kind of this political thaw and it was okay to speak about things. And you know, people studying English became really interested in the West and started learning about how things are done in the rest of the world. There had been kind of this narrative that, like in the United States, it was just pure capitalist exploitation and the people are miserable, but then people started to see, oh, that's not really true, and started talking about, well, why has America developed so well? And then talking in English did kind of allow this extra layer of protection. And you still do that, see that to some degree, but I think there is much less fear today in China. Interestingly enough, the Tiananmen massacre has been very heavily censored, and most young people don't really know the details about how it came about and why it was done and why the government massacred rather than just use non-deadly riot gear to break it up. It was kind of to send a message that that kind of protest wouldn't be tolerated, but now they've kind of erased that from the history books in China. Now the young generation doesn't have that instinctive fear, and they didn't grow up with Big Brother there. So I think that was one of the biggest things I was surprised by in my interviews, was how open young people were in talking about very sensitive political things. There's just not this instinctive fear that their parents had a generation ago.
Tell me a little bit about your new book and what draws you to write about Chinese students then coming to American universities.
Yeah, I was really kind of interested in the students who had studied abroad while I was in China coming back and how that influenced them. So that was kind of a natural progression once I moved back to the United States. And the number of Chinese students in American universities has just exploded. They went from about 50,000 10 years ago to now over 330,000. And this is just having huge effects on American universities and adapting to that. But it's also having very interesting influences on young Chinese. And I think kind of the conventional wisdom is if young Chinese come to the U.S. and see our political system, see how things are done here, they'll start to appreciate it more and see China more critically. But interestingly enough, for a lot of students, it's kind of the opposite. Some come here and become more critical of America and more supportive of their own government. So I'm kind of trying to hash that out and seeing kind of what mark American education is leaving on young Chinese and what that translates to when they go home.
Yeah, what are you seeing so far? What are some of those things that they say turn them off or they find disillusioning about America?
Well, one big issue is that a lot of state universities especially have had huge budget cuts over the last decade or so. So they're really looking to full tuition-paying international students, and Chinese are by far the largest cohort there that are able to pay full tuition. So a lot of universities are very aggressively recruiting Chinese students, and one unfortunate side effect is that is a lot of them have explicitly admitted that they have lowered standards for these international students to allow more of them to come. And the problem with that is that you have a lot of students now that are not really ready linguistically, not really ready to adapt to American culture, and just end up falling into groups of Chinese peers. In some universities, there are Chinese student bodies of 3,000-4,000. So it's easier than ever to just sink in with other Chinese and not really adapt to American culture. And I think the other thing, too, is students coming here now are predominantly middle class, upper class, and the winners of China's reform. So these students mostly live in big urban centers in China that have developed very well, and in like Shanghai, Beijing, in a lot of ways, are more advanced, like with the infrastructure and various quality of life measures than in the West. So a lot of students come here maybe with their exposure to America being Hollywood movies that give a very romanticized image of the West, and then they come and see kind of the more messy complications and see it's not as ideal as they had been led to believe. But it's different for everybody. I think a lot of students do come away with a more critical mindset and learn to better interrogate their own beliefs and identities. So, I mean, it just really depends on what their experience is like, where they're coming from when they come here, and I think that's one of the biggest things that marks this young generation of Chinese from any that came before it, is just the plurality of opinions, the diversity of attitudes and ideologies, and how individualistic they've become. And I think that's very true when they come here as well.
Let's talk about your time in China. You lived there for quite a number of years. What was that experience like? And, you know, was it what you expected it would be? Let's start there.
I mean, moving to China is always a surprise, just the speed of the changes that occur there. And that's what I found, too, which was really interesting, is that this is the same for Chinese. I mean, their society is changing so quickly that it's nobody's quite sure where their place is. And I mean, China had a stretch for about three decades where it was growing by 10-12% a year. I mean, you compare that to the U.S., where 2% growth is a good year here, and just the massive social economic change that comes with it. And you have this kind of weird hybrid government that's a Leninist socialist government overseeing a very hyper-capitalistic society. And you have all sorts of kind of interesting, unique social issues like the one-child policy that's creating all these social side effects, and just the speed of change and how it affects people's view and how it's is prompting a lot of Chinese to question what's happening to their society, where do they want their place to be in it. And I felt that too. It's very, I don't know, it can kind of upend you. Especially as a foreigner there, a lot of people are very curious about America and what my experience was like abroad, why I was interested in coming to China. So I found that very rewarding and being able to talk about my country and hopefully kind of complicate the way people I interacted with think about things. And they certainly complicated the way I see things. So it was very interesting. I'm kind of sympathizing with Chinese students now that I interview in the U.S. because a lot of them, they certainly don't feel American, but after having their thinking changed in so many ways, they don't feel entirely Chinese either and kind of feel alienated by both societies to some extent. And I kind of sympathize with that as well through my experience.
Let's just close with some thoughts on how Americans view Chinese millennials and view China. What are some of the gaps that you find you're consistently having to complicate the image that Americans have about China?
I think the problem is people just don't know much at all. I think, at least when I was in school, we didn't learn a whole lot about modern China, kind of stopped with Mao.
Right.
And there are a lot of preconceptions, and this is one thing that Chinese students I talk to kind of complain about, is Americans don't really understand the full picture of China. And like Chinese tend to have a pretty positive view of America because they largely get their impression, like I said, from Hollywood movies. We in the West mostly get our impression of China from media reports, which, like the media when it's covering domestic issues in the U.S., is overwhelmingly negative, which is kind of different than Chinese media. So it Right. focuses a lot on like corruption, pollution, like egregious injustices happening there, and that's a big story, though. That's a big part of China, but that's not the whole story. So I think a lot of Chinese are kind of put off when Americans have these very negative views and kind of challenge them on issues like Tibet, Taiwan, Tiananmen, and are kind of dogmatic or kind of expect them to have to justify things. So I think a lot of Chinese are put on the defensive by that, and just Americans not really understanding the whole situation, but thinking they do and thinking automatically. I think we kind of have this American exceptionalism idea here that our system is the end of history and everybody's going in that direction, otherwise they're doing something wrong. And I think a lot of Chinese feel that's kind of patronizing. That's further alienates. So I think, I would like to see a lot more education on China to kind of get a bigger picture of it and kind of the wonderful and sometimes disillusioning things that make up China.
Well, you can get some of that education tomorrow night, Tuesday, October 24th, with Eric Fish. And the entire program begins at 6 with a webcast, and that webcast features Steve Orleans interviewing former UN Ambassador Susan Rice. Then Eric Fish is after that. His book, China Millennials, The Want Generation, he writes for the Asia Society and hosts the Asia In-Depth podcast. Eric Fish, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.